thank you for joining us at Cultivating Hearts. We're back in the studio with this rambunctious group of young peeps. I won't say children this time, like I did last time. So it's the same group with us, Catherine and Laura and Grant and Jessica, and then, of course, Janelle, myself, Sandy, and Tara. Yay. And we're in John 13, 1 through 17, and we were just last week talked about Jesus and Peter and Judas in this passage and what we could learn from that. And now we're going to go on and we're going to focus in on all the other disciples in this passage.
Okay, let's just continue the conversation from where we were. For those of you that are listening for the first time, you need to go back. We've covered the passage. You can read John 13, 1 through 17. And I want to point out that we kind of were at the end of Judas, and I want you to understand that Judas, according to Holman New Commentary, said that he typifies a society in rebellion against God, and the Lord's treatment demonstrates God's grace. Judas was willing, was a willing perpetrator, but we have to understand he is the symbolism of the world in rebellion against God. And the water that Jesus was using was symbolic of the word, and the towel is symbolic of righteousness. So when we allow Jesus, the word, to wash us, that's how we get righteous. And Peter is the symbolism of the pride that we all have. And it's the pride of the unredeemed and those that resist cleansing by Jesus. And Jesus's actions are symbolic of what we should do as image bearers of God. So that kind of gives us like a full picture of what the symbolism that's happening. We also want to now examine the disciples, because Scripture names Jesus, it names Peter, and it names Judas in the Lord's Supper, but it doesn't necessarily name all the other disciples. They're just kind of there. But we learn a lot about them in this circumstance, because they've all walked into the room and they were debating who's going to be the greatest. And they're sitting there. They've walked into a room, and tradition at this time in their culture would have been that they would have been at a low-level table. When we were in Israel, Grant and I had the privilege. We went to the Negev, and they took us into a tea room that was set up with the tables on the floor with the pillows for us to sit around the tables to have tea. Mm-hmm. And this is what it would have been like for them. Now, we sat Indian style because that's how we are today. But in their day, they would have reclined on their right arm or their left arm to use their right hand to eat with. And so you have to visualize their feet would actually have been in close proximity because they would have been reclining at an angle. And so every single person would have somebody else's feet in close proximity to them. And Jewish tradition has that a teacher could never demand that a student wash their feet. How much more so the other way around? I mean, literally, a teacher couldn't demand it. And you've already heard Jesus says, you know, you can't, you know, you're no greater than your teacher. They know that they're less than a teacher. So it's a really big, profound thing. With all of that in your mind, with the cultural mindset, a servant's the one that washes the feet. Any person who washes the feet is saying, I am less than you. What do we learn about the disciples?
You know, as much as we condemn Peter for his zealous, you know, overreaction, I think that in some ways, you know, it's kind of insane that the other disciples didn't react that way. You know, they didn't defend the honor of Jesus to say, no, I am not greater than you. You do not get to stoop down to this level because you are greater than I am. And, you know, we're not really sure what was going on in Peter's head at the time, but it seems like there should have at least been something uncomfortable about this. Yeah. Is not normal, and this is changing what we're thinking about you.
Yeah, that's good. Anybody else? The disciples.
I think it's just interesting in general how, like, they don't say anything, which could kind of go two different ways. It could go to, like, the, wait, what in the world is happening? Like, we don't understand what's happening or why he's doing it. But it could also go the side of, like, there is pride in the fact that, like, he is washing our feet and he is taking time to, like, serve us and to honor us.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the disciples reclining around the table would have been aware of the fact that their feet were dirty?
Yeah, well, the culture was, this is interesting, I always wondered why, and I got to thinking about it, you know, the culture is that they always had a servant to wash their feet, and it didn't happen in this passage right away, but that just showed me that God was in control of this whole thing, and that's why, you know, maybe it didn't happen.
Okay. In a room full of men that are the disciples of Christ, who's training them up to be the ones who, and they don't realize this, they don't get the full extent of it, to be the leaders. What surprises me is no one took the initiative to ask, where's the servant?
Yeah.
No one took the initiative to say, everybody's feet are dirty. Nobody took the initiative to say, I should go check into this so that the Lord doesn't have to be worried about it. Oh my goodness, the Lord, the teacher, the master teacher is sitting amongst people with dirty feet. Mm-hmm. Nobody stood up and said, I'm going to take care of it. Everybody stayed back. And the reason was, is because no one wanted to reveal that they were inferior.
Oh, I was just telling you to get closer to the mic. Sorry.
Okay. That's all right. I'll get closer to the mic. And so, for me, it was, why? Why didn't they?
Yeah.
And because that's one of the questions I'm constantly asking myself as I'm walking across campus, for example. I was walking up and I was in the hall where Laura and Catherine are for the summer as our summer RAs. And I noticed that there's water on the floor. And immediately I take a photo and I'm sending it off to Deb. And they're both like, oh, she knows. We've already notified them. They've already taken the initiative and communicated in the proper way, because that's what needs to be done. A leader will follow through. Well, if I walked by and didn't say anything, I'm not doing what I should be doing. And so trying to make myself more aware, and somebody has to take the lead. And so I was surprised they didn't take the lead. That's he's been training them. He has sent them out into, at this point, two by two. He's wanting them to understand they have got to get this image bearing down. They aren't doing the image bearing like they should. They have to take the lead. A true leader is going to initiate. And none of them did. Not one of them.
That's what I mean. God was in control of this whole situation. If they'd
have done
it, would have changed things. You know,
there would have been another lesson.
Right.
But
it does seem like it's an example of the result of the fall, that men become passive and don't step up. And I mean, I think women struggle with that, too. But yeah, that we're not actually, like, taking that first step of thinking outside of ourselves.
Right. And for me as a leader, it's hard.
Yeah.
I'm more apt to think, okay, I just need to find a place to sit. And, okay, oh, wait, I want to be by my friend because then I know I can talk to my friend. Or,
Not that control thing.
I'm already comfortable reclining at the table. I don't want to have to get up because that means my knees are going to creak. You know, I mean, whatever. I mean, and one commentator said, do you realize he was reclining already? And it says he rose from the table. Mm-hmm. So Jesus was already settled.
And they already served the meal, I think.
They had already, you know, it was in progress. Yeah. According to the way it's worded, they believe that it is in progress. I think some commentators say it was at the end. But based on what I've studied and the way that it's laid out, it's definitely in progress, especially when you see that they continue the way the storyline goes. And so it's in progress. Mm-hmm. And so wanting us to be thinking through that, because that's what we need to do, is thinking about what it means to be an image bearer. I now want us to tag on. Catherine had caught on to when she was looking at Jesus. Let's go back and let's really hone in on Jesus for a little bit. He, at the beginning of this passage, it says, before the Passover meal, Jesus knew that his hour had come for him to depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, and he loved them to the end. I want us first to focus in just on what Jesus knew. I want you to think about and talk about with me the things that Jesus knew. And you may use other aspects of Scripture to support this, but what do we know Jesus knew?
Well, he knew he was going to the cross.
Okay. All right.
And dying the next day.
Okay.
I mean, he knew that these were going to be the last moments with his disciples, and that what he did would affect them and their ministry for the rest of their lives.
It makes me want to cry.
Well, verse 3 goes in and it talks about Jesus knew the Father had put all things under his power, so he knew that God was ultimately in control and he had to rest in
that. Yeah, so good.
And as we spoke about before, we know that Jesus knew who he was. He was confident in the authority that he has, and that's why he was able to, like, do this.
Mm. That's good.
Yeah, and say where he came from and where he was going. It seems like that's a big part, like, from God and going back to God.
Right.
So that I don't know. Like, knowing who you are in God is big, because then it's like, hey, like, if he just knew that, I guess that's where his confidence was, and what people thought or whatever didn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? I sat and I made a list of things that were relevant to me, and I recognized that Jesus knew his origin. It was from the Father. He knew he had the Father's authority, because it says, all authority has been given unto me. He knew his position. He was the Son sent to come and deliver us. He knew his relationship, Father, Son. He knew his relationship with his people, his very own people, okay? He knew his identity, which is what Catherine is explaining. He knew where he had come from. He knew where he was going. He knew how to give the Father glory in it. He knew tomorrow was the cross, and he knew his destiny would be fulfilled. Uh-huh. And when we have a full grasp of Jesus's identity and our identity is in him, it gives us the same confidence in what we're doing. So one commentator said, we need to grasp that Jesus knew he was the victor and not the victim. He was not from weakness, but from all authority, Jesus stooped from heaven to serve us. His position of authority was willfully given over at this point. He was willing to do it. And so thinking through that, I just was like overwhelmed by God. And I wrote out, I'm like, the one who had victory from the Father's hands, all authority under heaven and earth, girded his loins to wash the mud-caked, stinky disciples' feet before his own feet were washed. He stooped. He knelt, he scrubbed, he caressed, he loved. And that's the example of the full extent that he gave. Less than 24 hours before the cross, knowing he'd be scourged, spat on, pierced, rejected, made fun of, cursed, condemned.
It just kind of reminds me of what Catherine said, that, you know, the little things make a big difference, you know, like, when you think about what to do in your last moments, you want to do something big and important and something that will make a lasting impact. In that culture, washing someone's feet was something so small, something such a tiny task. You know, I think about when we serve in a church, we want to do something great. We want to, you know, lead the worship team, or, you know, be in the public eye, or do something big and important that people can recognize as a big deal. But it's really the small acts of service, the humble stacking of chairs, or something that's not an honorable or great, glorious task. That's what's the true testament of character and love, that we're willing to stoop to do the smallest.
Hmm. That's so good.
We our church meets in Village Point Theater right now. We're building it right now, but when you were saying that, there was a little boy that he's in a family of a great family. I think he might be 9. I don't know. He's not as old as Faith. He was telling me the other morning that he comes at 6 o'clock in the morning to help his dad set up all the stuff, like the music and the chairs and the all the little nursery rooms. And I thought, wow, you know, here is, there, those parents have taught him that you go help.
That's awesome. That's so beautiful. The simple movements that Jesus did on this, because, and it's funny because almost every commentator lists these out, because it is the simple acts. There's 4 that they focus in on, and I'd probably break up 3, but they all put 3 together. Number 3, I should say. First, he rose from the table. the simple act that he laid aside his garments. And one commentator said, keep in mind, he knew tomorrow he would lay aside his garments again. He took the towel and he girded himself and he poured water in the basin. And then I would add in, they all focused on the four. I would add in, then he touched them and washed them and dried them. Mm-hmm. You know, the act went further and the simple act of kindness continued. As I was thinking through that, I wrote down, I'm like, I cannot ever forget I'm created in his image. And I can't ever forget that somebody else is created in his image. We have to be ready, even when it's the Judas in our heart, you know, somebody that we view as a Judas, we have to be ready to serve. We have to be willing to do the simple acts and be willing to be there the way Jesus was with them. And that it can come in many different forms. Sometimes it's listening when it may not be something you want to sit and listen to. Sometimes it may be doing things that you may not want to. Sometimes it's being silent when you want to yell. Sometimes it's doing things for somebody that you don't want to do. There's a whole list of things that it can come out to be. And it's crazy what happens. You know, little things. I was the other day at Walmart and this lady was in front of me, and I'm not telling this because I'm not bragging, I'm just telling as it, her heart is what tickled mine. She didn't have the cash that she needed, and it wasn't much, and I'm just standing there, and she's like, oh, let me run out, my husband's in the car. And I'm like, ma'am, no, wait. And she's like, and I go, just put it on my bill, you go, take your bags, go. And she at first froze, and she's like, I can't do it. I can't do it. And I just looked at her. I'm like, it's okay. Jesus loves you. And she's like, I'm paying it forward. You know, like, and then she ran out the door. And the guy that was running the register just kind of looked at me like, what just happened? You know, kind of thing. And I saw the struggle in her. First, I will confess, first the struggle was in me. It's like, are you kidding me? Yeah. God, forgive me. Yeah. And then I was convicted. And then it was, I need to do this. And then I moved forward, and then she started to say no, and then I kept going. And so being willing to be available when God gives us those moments, yes. Not to hesitate. So come back next week so we can look at the rest of this passage. God bless.